Let's hop around, as we say. So you should have two handouts. Both of them are focused on the Derech HaLimud of Reb Chaim Brisker. So that's where I want to put my my kochus, you know, in the time to come. What is unique about Reb Chaim? So what you should have in front of you, just first of all, in terms of the pages, you should have a page that says on it, on the top left, Chidushei Agrach al Rama Hilchos Sukkah. Okay, you'll see that. And then you should have a page that says Chidushei Reb Chaim Halevi Hilchos Trumos. Hopefully you have that. Then you should have a page that says Chidushei Reb Chaim Halevi Hilchos Rotzeach Ushmiras HaNefesh, which is two sides. Does everybody have that? You don't have that? Okay, so let me give out that. If somebody could just throw it, pass it around. So those are three Reb Chaims that we want to study today. Be'ezer Hashem. Okay. And we'll see if you can maybe even make a little packet out of it. Here's a stapler. And we'll see if we can find a parallel between those three pieces of Reb Chaim. There's a fourth piece of Reb Chaim that might help us. And that's in Hilchos Tumas Ochlim. But I still have to work that out because I'm not holding in Tumas Ochlim, so I need a little bit more work on that. And we're going to try to find a common thread amongst these various Chidushim Reb Chaim, the four Chidushim, three of which I gave you, and the fourth which I want to work on today. In addition, I gave you, if you hopefully have, four pages, four sides. It's only one page, but it should have four different sides from Yishiv V'Shitot Rav Zevin. And I think if can you tell me where it starts and where it ends? It should be 62 to 65.
60 through 63.
Okay, great. 60 through 63. That's great. That's excellent. And all these pages are meant to give us a flavor of Reb Chaim's Derech HaLimud. We are beginning our Limud with a premise, and it's a very, shall I say, debatable premise. It could kick up a lot of controversy. And the premise is that Reb Chaim Brisker had a tremendous contribution, almost a revolution of sorts, in how to learn and how to understand the Torah. The mechutin of Reb Chaim, his name was Feinstein, his first name was Elia of Prizhena. He was the Rav in a town called Prizhen, and when somebody told him over Reb Chaim's Torah once, apparently, that's how the story goes, he says, "Ich bin farmatten Torah." I'm before the Torah was given, so I can't understand Reb Chaim. It's as if to say that Reb Chaim is a new matten Torah. Now, I'm not sure if he was being cynical, but he did say something that does support this position that Reb Chaim is like a new matten Torah. Okay. What I'm going to try to present is the following thesis: that Reb Chaim consistently forces us to analyze the halacha under the following structure. And we've mentioned this in the past, but I think today I have it down a little bit more pat. I have a little bit more of a scientific approach. And that is the halacha reflective of a general principle which Reb Chaim calls a din klali, or does it reflect a local principle, a new principle called a din mesuyam? We've spoken about this in the context of Shabbos at great length. We dedicated a whole shiur to this, if I think it was about 2 weeks ago, and we discussed two different issues. Like, for example, in Meleches Kosev, you can talk about defining Siva universally and defining Siva as a Malach and Hilchos Shabbos under the law, under the rule of Meleches Makshevus. And we did the same with regard to Kshira, tying knots, and other different aspects of Hilchos Shabbos, whether they reflect universal or specific. Okay. Now, these three pieces that we want to look at, I would put them in the following sequence. The most challenging of them all is the Reb Chaim in Hilchas Sukkah. And I think the easiest, at least for me, is the Reb Chaim in Hilchas Rotzeach. The Reb Chaim in Hilchas Trumas, I think, is somewhere in the middle. And I was vacillating back and forth. Should we start with the most challenging or with the easiest one? Anybody have a vote on that? You know, we'll have to make it a democratic vote. And then I'll decide, of course.
Yeah, middle one sounds good.
I can't start with the middle one. I'll tell you why, because the other two are going to really set the framework for the middle one. So it's either that we start with Hilchas Sukkah, which I think is very challenging but very enjoyable, or with Hilchas Rotzeach, which is the least challenging but maybe the most enjoyable. So which one will it be? Hilchas Rotzeach? Alright, so we'll start with Hilchas Rotzeach, because John is the only one who expressed his vote. And for me, it's the easiest.
David didn't, he just...
Okay. No, David's vote I can't accept. It's
very
democratic.
Alright. After it settled, we've been in, but he left the deal.
Yeah, he left. Okay. The Rambam, at the very beginning of Hilchas Rotzeach, presents a parasha in Halacha which is called the Rodef. And the Rambam says that we're not allowed to have any compassion for the Rodef, and therefore we have to destroy the life of the Rodef. And therefore the Rambam goes on to say that in the case of a pregnant woman, if the birth process is endangering the life of the mother, then we destroy the life of the fetus in order to save the mother. But the Rambam goes on to say, once the baby is born, which halachically means it's rov padachto, is already out, at that point we apply a different principle, which is called ein dochin nefesh b'chnei nefesh. We cannot kill the baby at that point to save the mother. So if you've ever heard, which at least in my youth they used to say, that the difference between Christianity and Judaism is that, you know, the Christians will allow the mother to die and the Jews will kill the baby to save the mother, that's not exactly accurate. Because even in Judaism, in certain cases, will allow the mother to die once the birth process has begun. So to simplify Judaism in that way is certainly not the case. What is Reb Chaim interested in? So if you turn to page 95, okay, that's the flip side, you'll see that Reb Chaim starts with a premise, and then he analyzes that premise. Okay, what is the premise? The premise of Reb Chaim is that this whole parsha of killing the Rodef to save the Nirdof begins with Hatzolas HaNirdof, which means that it's not that we're just vigilantes, you know, killing someone who deserves to die, because again, at this point, it's only attempted murder in the case of a Rodef. That's not what it's all about. What at the beginning and the end of this whole parasha of killing the Rodef is Hatzolas HaNirdof. And therefore, for example, the Rambam paskins, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that if you can save the Nirdof without killing the Rodef, that's called Yochel Atzilu B'Yachad Me'Varav, that's what you have to do. So if you shoot for the legs, as we would say in modern terms, and save the Nirdof, then there's no destruction of the life of the Rodef. So to say that there's an absolute Chiyuv HaRodef, that the Rodef deserves to die, that's not true. Because the entire parasha and all its details depend upon Hatzolas HaNirdof. Okay. Now Reb Chaim is ready to present a Chakira, which he calls Yesh Lehistapik, which is typical of Reb Chaim. We're going to build a great deal on the structure of this suffix. And this you'll see on line 3. You have it? Yesh l'istapik. Im kol gzeres hakosiv derodef, hu rak bi'atzmo shel harodef sheyidoche mipnei pikuach nafsho shalad nirdof, is the entire Gzeiras HaKosuv and the mitzvah saseh to kill the rodev entirely generated by Hatzolas HaNirdof, which is called Pikuach Nefesh. Please keep in mind that Reb Chaim is very deliberate about using that term, Pikuach Nefesh. Aval Iker Hatzolas HaNirdof Himishum Din Pikuach Nefesh Shel Kol HaTorah Kula. What is this called in Reb Chaim's terminology? Din Klol. There's halacha of Pikuach Nefesh. We have to do whatever we have to do to save a nefesh. In the case of a rodef, the Torah says that if we need to, we're going to kill the rodef for the sake of the pikuach nefesh of the nirdof. This is a further application of the universal rule of pikuach nefesh. Or this is the second side of Reb Chaim Dineima, we should present the following formulation: the gam beikar hatzolah shel nirdof, even in terms of the laws of hatzolah of the nirdof, he gzeras hakosuv shel rodef udin hatzolah bifnei atzma shel nirdof. I want to make 2 points here. Point number one, just a very important point about the terminology of Reb Chaim, the way he uses phrases. When he says din bifnei atzmo, if you could underline those words, he means din misuyam. So whenever you see, and we're going to see it over again in Reb Chaim's literature, that he calls it a din bifnei atzmo, he's referring to a din misuyam. That's point number one. Point number two is that Reb Chaim mentions the phrase gzeiras hakosuv. And my contention is that whenever Reb Chaim wants to present a din misuyam, which lechora prima facie I could have derived from a din klali, I don't need a din misuyam, Reb Chaim is going to prove that it's a din misuyam based on gzeiras hakosuv. Why do I need gzeiras hakosuv, asks Reb Chaim. He never spells out the question, but apparently if I need gzeiras hakosuv, it's because I'm dealing with a din misuyam. Okay, those are just two technical points. Now, legufo shel inyan, what Reb Chaim is suggesting in the second approach is that the parsha of Rodev is not based on pikuach nefesh. It's a brand new parsha, which means that it operates with its own rules and regulations. And the universal regulations of pikuach nefesh are irrelevant to the parsha of Rodev. Now, at some point, Reb Chaim might say Tzvei Din. He might go ahead and pull another structure of Reb Chaim. He might say, well, we need the universal halacha of Pikuach Nefesh, and at the same time, we need another din called a special din Mesuyim Gzeiras HaKosuv of Rodin.
Where's the source of the universal din of Pikuach Nefesh?
V'chai bahem v'lo sheyomus bahem. That's in Parshas Kedoshim, if I remember. Say it again?
Then we learn that mitzvahs, like Shabbos and Pikuach Nefesh.
Yeah.
But the general concept, other than it being an obvious midah, a humane thing to do, is there an assay of Pikuach Nefesh?
The assay is a different sugya. And that's derived from a parasha in Kitetze, which is called Vashevoso Lo. In the parasha of Hashavas Aveda, the Torah adds a word Vashevoso. And the Gemara learns from that Pikuach Nefesh, in order to save a person's life, we're obligated to do whatever we have to do. Okay, so we have something called Pikuach Nefesh. Okay. Says Reb Chaim, V'nira, dechenu ke'ofen hasheni shekasav. Now again, a typical structure of Chaim, he offers two possible definitions and then he removes one, and by process of elimination he proves the other. He's now going to prove that we're dealing with a din misuyam and not a din kloli of pikuach nefesh. How does he know this? Sharei besugya sham, there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I believe it's on Daf Ayin Hey. Mivur, the Gemara explains the Alfinon Din Rodef Mikra from a pasuk that appears in Parshas Noach. Now, as soon as Rabbi Moshe, you hear Parshas Noach, what do you know? that's a din for Bnei Noach. It's not a din for Klal Yisrael. This is before the Torah is given. And what does the Torah tell Noach? It tells Noach, Shofech dam ha'odom bi odom domo yishofech. Okay? That this law of Rodef means that, again, this is the way the Gemara darshens the Pasuk, that Shofech dam ha'odom means someone who threatens to spill the blood of his fellow man, domo yishofech. We will spill his blood before he gets a chance to spill someone else's blood. This, according to the Sugyan Sanhedrin, is the source for the din of Rodef. Says Reb Chaim, a brilliant chiddush, if the pasuk, which is the source for the din of Rodef, is addressing Bnei Noach, is memela reyesh din ze gam b'Bnei Noach, the parsha zu halo nemra l'Noach. Interesting. That if a guy is, a non-Jew is threatening the life of another non-Jew, then the law requires that we take the life of the pursuer in order to save the life of the pursued. V'cheinu lehedja, take a look in the sugya of Bnei Noach in Sanhedrin Nun Zayin. Choshiv lahachti yochel atzilo b'yachem meivarm ki yotzim zeh b'nachri. That if one guy threatens the life of another guy, and we can save the life of the pursued without taking the life of the pursuer, then that's what the law is. So you see that the mechanism and the rules that apply to Rodev apply even to Bnei Noach. V'cheini b'Rambam b'perek tes milchus melachim. The Rambam codifies that in Hilchus Melachim amongst the laws of Bnei Noach. Hare lehedja, dim eino yochel lahatzil b'echad meivarov. If there's no way of saving the nirdaf without killing the rodev, the only possibility is you have to wipe out the rodev in order to save the nirdaf. Matzilin also b'nafshel shel rodev gam b'bnei noach. Says Reb Chaim, hare lo matzinu din pikuach nefesh b'bnei noach. Pili plon. We never thought of this. The Torah says v'chai mohem, and the Torah is addressing Klal Yisrael. There's no v'chai mohem with regard to Bnei Noach. Now let's understand. Again, this is Berzon talking, but I hope I'm not mispresenting Reb Chaim. The Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin vacillates as to whether Bnei Noach is obligated in Kiddush Hashem. So now you put a gun to a guy's head and you say, worship this idol or I'll kill you. Does the guy have to give up his life? That's derived from the parash of Kiddush Hashem. But in the parash of Kiddush Hashem it says, V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. So the Gemara says, seven mitzvahs were given to a ben Noach, but not an eighth mitzvah. Says Tosfos, what the Gemara was vacillating about is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. But as far as Pikuach Nefesh is concerned, meaning that the guy should be allowed to worship an idol in order to save his own life, that was never an issue to begin with. Because as Tosfos points out, there was never a pasuk of V'chai Bahem with regard to Ben Noach. Meaning the following, it's pretty mind-boggling. With regard to Klal Yisrael, Hashem says we have to judge which is, so to speak, more valuable. Is it the Nefesh Yisrael, or is it the violation of the law? So for the sake of saving the Nefesh Yisrael, we might violate the Torah law. Hashem will look the other way, so to speak, suspend his law for the sake of saving Jewish life. That's called V'chai Mohem. But with regard to a Ben Noach, he doesn't have a Chai Mohem. He has seven mitzvahs. And just like in the case of a Jew, if not for the V'chai Mohem, I'm left with 613 mitzvahs. I have no heter to violate any of those 613. Comes along V'chai Mohem and says, well, that's a matir, which allows you to violate for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh. In the case of a guy, there is no such thing. So even though the Gemara concludes that the guy doesn't have a mitzvah asay of Kiddush Hashem, which goes way beyond Pikuach Nefesh, that's not for us now, but that's another subject unto itself, but he definitely has the commitment to the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach without the matir of v'chaima. If that be the case, Reb Chaim asks the following question: how could the parsha of Rodef apply to a ben Noach? How could we allow killing the Rodef to save the Nirdof in Eino Yochel Atzil Bechem Neivarov under the law of v'chaimim? There is no law of v'chaimim with regard to b'nei Noach. Is al karacha, says Reb Chaim, it can't be that the parsha of Rodef, which is derived from b'nei Noach, is predicated on pikuach nefesh. And therefore, Reb Chaim says that the din of atzolas hanirdof in the parasha of Rodef is a new gzeiras hakasuv, and it applies even as far as a guy is concerned to allow the guy to take the life, if need be, of the Rodef under the law of parasha's Rodef, not under the law of v'chaimahem. So it's not that v'chaimahem in the parasha of Rodef allows us to go as far as to kill someone for the sake of v'chaimahem, but rather v'chaimahem doesn't apply. What does apply is a new parasha, a gzeiras hakosuv, a din mesuyah of Rodef. And therefore Reb Chaim comes to the conclusion that once the baby pops its head out, under the laws of Pikuach Nefesh, we might have possibly allowed killing the baby in order to save the mother, but we have another principle, and that's a law in Parshas Rodef called Ein Dochin Nefesh B'Pnei Nefesh. Meaning that there are different definitions of a Rodef. In the case of a baby, before the baby is born, the baby is considered a rodef. After the baby is born, we have a principle called min hashamayim karadfile, which removes the shame rodef from the baby. And as a result, we cannot kill the baby in order to save the mother. All this is a reflection of the gzeres hakasuv of the new parsha called rodef. So again, I'm with you, David, in just a second, but what I really want to get to, because again, we would need another couple of hours for this, Reb Chaim, is the following. The structure, the analytic process of Reb Chaim is to take a parsha and analyze it from the perspective of universal law. We have a universal law that applies to all the mitzvahs in the Torah called the Chaimah. Is the parsha of Rodef simply another application of that law? Just it takes me one step further. Normally the Chaimah tells me, well, I can violate 610 of the mitzvahs, but I can't kill someone for the sake of a Chaimah. But in this case, the Torah says, for the sake of a Chaimah, we have a heter to even take the life of the Rodef if need be. Or no. Or we're dealing with a whole new parsha. Leave out the Chaimah. What we're dealing with is a din mesuyim, a gzeiras hakasuv, what Reb Chaim calls a din b'fnei atzmo of parshas Rodef. And Reb Chaim says that from the fact that the gzeiras hakasuv of Rodef is derived from b'nei Noach, it means that it's not predicated upon v'chaim. David?
Yeah. Once the baby is born, how would killing the baby save the mother's life? If the mother's in distress, once the baby...
Well, it seems like this. Again, I'm not a gynecologist, and certainly not a I'm not a physician. But what I can tell you is the following: that the body of the baby is more bulky than the head of the baby. So that if a woman is in a very dangerous, situation, when the head comes out, that she can still survive, we can still save her perhaps. But when the body comes out, that's so much more traumatic, it could just tip the scale and she would die. So even though the head came out, we can still theoretically stop, we can, so to speak, freeze the process of birth in a way that we can save the life of the mother.
When the head is out, that's called being born at that point.
Oh, of course, halachically, that's called being born. Now the parasha of Rodef, which as we said has its own rules and regulations, has a brand new rule. And that's called Ein Dochin Nefesh Mipnei Nefesh. That according to Reb Chaim, again, that's the second half of this Reb Chaim, the Hafka of the Shem Rodev, which is called Veneshamayim Karadfi way, is simultaneous with the emergence of the Nefesh. When the head pops out, we have something called a Chal Shem Nefesh. Okay. And that Chal Shem Nefesh is Mafkia, it completely undermines the status of a Rodev. Again, that's the second half of this Reb Chaim. What I was more interested in is the first half of this Reb Chaim, in which Reb Chaim goes back and forth as to whether or not we're dealing with Pikuach Nefesh. He has another interesting proof here in the same paragraph, and I don't want to belabor this because I want to get to the Rabbah Hilchos Sukkah, that he says that the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Gimel derives other halachas of Rodev from the Parsha of Arayos, where it says V'ein Moshia La, which means that she's guilty because, I'm sorry, she's innocent because, and why did she scream out? Because there was no one there to save her. Implying if there was someone there to save her, he would be able to even kill the Rodev who's trying to rape this woman in order to save her and spare her. So Reb Chaim says that doesn't fit at all into the parasha of Pikuach Nefesh. Her life is not in danger. The rapist who deserves to die, according to Halacha, is not endangering her life. So once again, you see that we're not operating within the framework of Pikuach Nefesh of Kol HaTorah Kula. He has a third proof, which I can't find right now, about there's a machlokas rishonim in Masechta Yoma. You know, it says that if the pregnant woman smells food on Yom Kippur and she has a tremendous desire to eat, then we're going to allow her to eat on Yom Kippur. This machlokas rishonim, why? Some say because her life could be in danger, and others say because the life of the fetus is in danger. But it would seem that according to those Rishonim who say that her life is in danger, we would not allow the violation of Yom Kippur for the sake of saving the fetus. Because Pikuach Nefesh doesn't apply until the baby is born. Now, we don't pass on that, but you should know that some Rishonim are of that opinion, which means that a fetus is not exactly a Nefesh. For example, in Halacha, if a Jew would destroy a fetus, he's not put to death for that. Again, Goyim have different demon, but for a Jewish person. And therefore, the status of the fetus is less than a nefesh. It's, again, we could call it nefesh eino gomer. It's very complicated, but it's not a complete nefesh. And therefore, some Rishonim hold that we violate Yom Kippur for the sake of pikuach nefesh, which means the nefesh of the mother. If the physicians determine that if she doesn't eat, her life is in peril, then we'll allow her to violate Yom Kippur, but not for the sake of the peril of the fetus alone. So let's say if she won't die if she fasts, but the baby will die, according to one school of thought, we don't pass it like this, you would not be allowed to violate Yom Kippur. So if that be the case, then this whole approach of Rodef and Nirdaf in the case of a baby doesn't seem to make any sense from the perspective of Pikuach Nefesh, since Pikuach Nefesh doesn't operate according to those Rishonim with regard to a fetus. Anyway, the main thrust of what I wanted to show you is this is a beautiful case, an example of Reb Chaim clearing, you know, two possible definitions, whether it's a din kloli or a din misuyam, from the fact that you see Gzeiras HaKosuv, especially Alfusa, you're not operating within Pikuach Nefesh universally. From the fact that this halacha of Rodef applies where Pikuach Nefesh would not apply, we prove that we're dealing with a din misuyam and not a din kol. On the side, Reb Chaim, which I always get excited about, after he clears the chakira, he always proves one side. According to legend, Reb Chaim started that way of thinking when he was a boy of 8 years old. What was the story? He was walking with his father. And in those days, they had water carriers. They didn't have the kind of plumbing that we had. You know, we're going back to 1850 or 1870, whatever the year is. So Rabbi Yosher Ber, the Beis HaLevi, was walking with his 8-year-old son, Chaimke, and they saw a water carrier who had two buckets, and one bucket was filled with water and the other bucket was filled with stones. So the Beis HaLevi turned to Little Chaim and he asked him, what's going on over here? This is like very strange. So the little Reb Chaim said the following. There are two possibilities here. He says that either there was only enough water left in the well to fill one bucket, and therefore to balance himself, he filled the other bucket with stones. Or the other possibility is that one bucket had a hole in it, and it couldn't take the water would drip out, and therefore he had to take the stones. So Reb Chaim, after he offered these two interpretations to his father, he said it can't be that there was a limited amount of water, because if there's a limited amount of water and the two buckets were whole, then he would have taken half the water and put it in one bucket and half the other bucket. It must be that there was one bucket with a hole. This is what Reb Chaim said at the age of 8. So, this Derech HaLimud where you offer two interpretations of what's going on and then you take off one. Okay. So now we want to look at the Reb Chaim in Hilchos Sukkah. Okay. So that you'll see. And that's a little bit more challenging, to say the least. It's Chidushei Agracha Rambam Hilchos Sukkah Perkei Halacha Yutes. Okay. Now, some of this Reb Chaim got cut off because I was trying to fit it all in a limited number of pages, but the main paragraph that we want to look at will say Vahanira Lomar. You have that? Okay. It's page 13. I added the word, the number 13, which didn't come out if you ever want to look it up in the Reb Chaim. Okay. Now, to appreciate this Reb Chaim, we need to see two sugyas in the Gemara in Sukkah. Okay. The Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph quotes a machlokes. So let me get the right page for a second. Between Rav Acha and Ravina. Okay. Now, the premise of this sugya on Daf Yud Ches is that Avir is posel if there's more than three tefachim of Avir. So what is a sukkah? A sukkah is made up of two defanos and a third tefach, and schach on top. The schach is allowed to have empty space up to but not beyond three tefachim. Okay then? And the Gemara says the following. Hani mili, when does this apply, this rule? That if it's less than three tefachim, the sukkah is kosher, that's only minatzad. That means you have one of the defanos of the sukkah, and the schach is at a distance of less than three tefachim from the dofen. And in that area, we'll call it 2.9 tefachim, there's avir, this empty airspace on top of the dofen. Avol be'emtza, but if you have schach that touches the defanos, but in the middle of the sukkah there is avir, that's going to be a machlokes. Pligi bar Rav Acha Ravina. Chad omar yesh lavud ba'emtza, which means that there's a principle called lavud. Lavud means that when two things are in proximity of less than three tefachim, we consider them to be adjoined. And that's halacha in Hilchas Erevin. That applies also to sukkah as well, but it's fundamentally an Erevin sugya. And therefore, the halacha of lavud would be machshir the sukkah, even if the empty space is in the middle of the sukkah. The chad amar, but the other opinion is, ein lavud ba'emtza. The sukkah is a sukkah psula. And the reason for that is because avir shebe'emtza chotzeitz ben shnei chelkei asukkah. that at the point in which there's empty space in the sukkah, in the middle of the schach, in the middle of the sukkah, that separates the sukkah into two, and as a result, each chelik of the sukkah has maximum two defanos, but it can't have a third dofen once you split the sukkah into two. In any event, yeah, I'm sorry.
Why not? It's three.
Well, again, you're talking about, let's say, you have one here, and one there. So if you split the sukkah into two, then...
Oh, it's a sukkah made up of three walls.
Three walls.
Yeah. And then...
What's called two and it's
split in the middle of the U.
Correct. So if it's the middle of the U, then you can only have maximum of two defanos. And that's one mantiyom. Okay. Okay, fine. That's the sugya on daf. This sugya, says Reb Chaim, proves that the halacha of lavud, which saves avir, meaning avir is a negative force, it's a posel in schach, but the savior, if you pardon the phrase, is lavud. Now the machlok says in the Gemara is whether or not lavud applies only to attach the schach to the dofen, but it doesn't apply in the middle of the sukkah. Or shall we say, no, we can apply the principle of lavud even in the middle of the sukkah. So Reb Chaim understands from this sugya that the issue of avir pachos mi gimel tfach in the middle of the sukkah depends upon two definitions of lavud, meaning how does lavud work. Now Reb Chaim quotes a different sugya, which is going to lead us to a totally different conclusion.
So, isn't love a matter de rabbanan?
No, I think love is d'oraisa, if I remember correctly. Okay, let's operate with that premise. Okay, I can't quote you all the sugyas in Erevin for that, but okay. Now we get to another sugya, which again, let me see if I can find the sugya. It's on Daf Yutes. Just give me a second here to get myself oriented. Yeah. Yutes of it off. Okay. Now, the Gemara Daf Yutes of it Aleph quotes a Braisa. The Braisa is very short, but there's a long sugya to try and interpret the Braisa with five different interpretations of the Braisa. We can only focus on one of those interpretations. What does it say in this very ambiguous, very short abridged price? So it says, pisol, the word pisol is a synonym for schach, sheyotze min asukah, nidona kisukah. So initially the Gemara understands that the schach, sheyotze min asukah, means that you have a sukkah, and then the schach somehow extends beyond the dofen. And the Braisa says that schach is kosher. So Gemara says, what do you mean it's kosher? Where are the three defanos? So Gemara says, well, there are, in addition to the defanos on the inside, there are defanos on the outside. So the Gemara says, so what's the chiddush of the Braisa? If you have defanos, so the Gemara tries to say that maybe it's not zayin tfachim. So Gemara says, if it's not zayin tfachim, then it's not a sukkah, so certainly it should be pasul. And then the Gemara goes into all clear whether or not the dofen could serve a double function. Meaning, could the dofen and the sukkah serve both as a dofen for the inside, meaning the major part of the sukkah, and for the outside of that dofen for the second sukkah, if you will. So the Gemara quotes, again, I'm fast forwarding for what we need, Rav Oshia. Lo nitzcho, what is this price addressing? El l'schach posel. We're not talking about schach on the outside of the dofen, meaning that you laid schach in such a way that it overextends whatever the word is beyond the dofen, but rather we're talking about one sukkah and the inside of the sukkah. The Gemara is going to try to figure out how that fits into the language of the Braisa, but in any event, the case is schach posel. And why does the Braisa say the sukkah is kshera if it's made up of schach posel? Because it's pachos mishlosha. it's less than three tfachim of schach posel. So you have a sukkah that's got plenty of schach kosher, but it's got 2.9 tfachim of schach posel. Then the Gemara says that Rav Oshi interprets this price as referring to a sukkah katana. Sukkah katana means it has the barest exact minimum necessary for sukkah. That's called zayin tfachim on zayin tfachim. The Gemara says, my yotze, what is the price of me when it says the schach is yotze? And the Gemara gives the bedochak a pshat that's yotze mitorah sukkah, meaning it doesn't have the status of schach because it's schach posel. Maskif lo Rav Hoshea, Rav Hoshea asks the following question. What are you telling me? That the Braisa is teaching me that if the schach posel is less than three tfachim, that the sukkah is kshera? I don't need a Braisa for that. Lo yehei ela ka'avir. It shouldn't be worse than if there was no schach. The Gemara thinks that schach posel at least is schach. But avir is zero. And in the case of Avir, we had halacha that if it's pachos mishlosha tfachim, the sukkah is kshera. Avir pachos mishlosha tfachim, the sukkah ktana, mi posel. Why would I think it's posel? So let's see what Reb Chaim learns from this sugya on Daf Yud Tes. V'nira lomar bidas haRambam. You have it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have it with the underlines? That, or, no, maybe I photocopied it before I did the underlines, or I don't remember anymore.
There are four lines of underlines.
Okay, good. Hine tzarech iyun. It's interesting. Before Reb Chaim, we saw in Hilchos Matzot that says yesh l'stapik. Sometimes he says tzarech iyun. Behadi avir shloshat posel besukah v'lo pachos. That if you have empty space up on the schach, it's only posel if you have shloshet tfachim. But if you have 2.9 tfachim, it's not a posel. Im zeu midin lavud. Now lavud, as I told you before, is halacha in mechitzos in general. It's gonna apply to definitions of rishus hayochid and rishus harabim and mechitzos and erevin and so forth and so on. So that would make it into what if it's lavud? A din klali. Oh, do din mesuyam, again, here he says mesuyam in Rotzech, he didn't call it mesuyam, bifnei atzmo, but he does have bifnei atzmo. Me hilchasa gemiralon. Hilchasa gemiralon means all shiurim, measurements, are given from Moshe, go back to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai. The shlosha cholek makom bifni atzmo uposel besukah. Then once you have three tfachim of avir, that separates anything that's on the two sides because now you have a new makom of three tfachim. That's in Hilchash Yurim, three tfachim set up a makom bifni atzmo. Ubiemes, he says, l'chor I can prove it. From the sugya of Avir be'emtza sukkah. Why? The sugya mefureshesi besukkah daf yud ches. The pligi Rav Oshav Ravina be Avir be'emtza sukkah. Chad omer yesh lovud be'emtza. Chad omer ain't lovud be'emtza. The machlokas is how far do we extend and apply the principle of lovud? Do we apply it when we're connecting the schach on this side of the Avir with the dofen? That's on the other side of the Avir? Or can we even connect it with two sides of the schach in the middle of the sukkah? Then obviously the Gemara is operating within the frame of reference of the universal halachas of lavud. When does lavud apply? When does not lavud apply? Hari Lehedja. Clearly we understand that Avir posel b'mashu, in other words, mikar adin, once there's Avir, the sukkah should be posel. Rak mishum dina de lavud, who dieno posel b'pachos mishlosha. And then there's a plug to whether or not we can apply lavud in the middle of a sukkah. So at this point, what Reb Chaim has is a clear-cut proof for the first tzad in this chakira, namely we're dealing with the din klol. Achen koshal ze. Now watch this move, this brilliant move of Reb Chaim. This was the part that got cut off in the photocopy, which is the sugya on Daf Yud Tes. The ka'amar al schach posel pochos mishlosha. Right, the case was you had a sukkah ketana and it's got schach posel. and it's less than three tefachim. And the Gemara argues that pshita, that the sukkah certainly is a sukkah kshera. Why? Because lo yehei ela avir. If you want to disqualify the sukkah, I'm sorry, the schach posel, consider it like there was no schach posel. It's pure avir. The avir pachas mishlosha miposel. We know that avir less than three tefachim is not posel. V'i neima dechol shir dishlosha who midin lavud. If there's no separate halach of shlosha tefachim as a shear in makom, you know, separating the two parts of the sukkah, but rather it's simply an application of the law of lavud and kain. Habischach posel lo shayach din lavud. V'hayelo lifsol gam bepachas mishlosha. In other words, the Gemara's analogy or equation between schach posel and avir is an invalid analogy, because in the case of avir, we have the right to apply the principle of lavud. In the case of schach posel, we don't have the right to apply the principle of lavud. So what is Gemara saying? That schach posel is no worse than avir. It's a heck of a lot worse than avir, because it's mafkia, the law of lavud. Lavud only applies when there's nothing separating between two objects, two defanos or whatever. You can attach them to the two because of the din that avir has a halach of lavud. But here we're talking about schach posel. My medame a gemara schach posel yavir. Ella says Reb Chaim, vaday we see that all the avir shlosha posel besukah who midin shiura, meaning it sets up a hefsek in the sukkah that defines this three tefachim of psul as a makom bifnei atzma, separating the sukkah, slicing it into two halves. It comes under the halacha l'moshe misinai of all shiurim, that what's considered a shiur of makom bifnei atzma, it's three tefachim. Kol shum shlosha, kol shum makom bifnei atzma, lifsol es ha-sukkah, to slice and cut the sukkah into two halves. Valkein, the Gemara now makes the following equation. Tzchach posel is the same as avir. Now, if you're telling me that there's halach in shiurim, that what's considered a makom b'fnei atzmo, shlosha tfachim, that's the shear of a makom b'fnei atzmo, then what difference does it make whether it's got tzchach posel or whether it become avir? In kena reba emto minatzad shove. In other words, whether or not the avir or the tzchach posel is contiguous to the dofen, or it's in the middle of the sukkah, it's all the same. And therefore, we understand very well why the Gemara equates schach posel with avir under the halach of gimel tefachim b'Torah shiur. But if it was halach of lavud, then the Gemara has no application, because there's no lavud in schach posel. Schach posel is the separation between two sides. You can't apply the principle of lavud. But yet, we go back to the Gemara on Daf Yud Ches, and the Gemara wants to know, is there lavud b'yem tzasukah? So the Gemara was operating with the din of lavud. V'yem kein, harei b'yem tzah, u'min atzad shom v'kosha, ma tala the Gemara b'din lavud. Achein, here Reb Chaim pulls off the shtei halachas, tzvei din. He says, b'emes, travayu tzrichin, we need both. We need the halacha of lavud as a universal halacha. We need the halacha of shiurim, of gibel tfachim, makes it into a makom b'fnei atzma. Enochinami, the avir shlosha. When you're talking about defining three tfachim as a separate makom, humidin shiurim, that's halacha Moshe Misinai, that as far as sukkah is concerned, three tefachim is considered a makom b'fnei atzma, and apostles the sukkah. Okay, now he has a whole discussion, which I'm afraid is going to take us... So that's halacha of shlosha tefachim as a shir. When do we need the halacha of lavud? Fine, I'm fast-forwarding. Oh, the time of the lavud will be dina achrina. If you skip about 10 lines, you'll see a line that starts with the word midina. So you want to underline that. The time of the lavud who midina achrina. When do we need the universal halach of lavud? Who mishum din defanos ha'omer besukah shtayim kilchason ushlishes tefach v'ima avir mafsik beinehem harei nimtza. Now, in addition to this halach of makom bifnei atzvo, which is reflective and dependent upon the shiurim of gimel tfachim, we have another problem, and that's the problem of tziruf. You have to be mitzarif the schach to the dofen. That has nothing to do with the issue of makom bifnei atzmo. And he says the following, that if you don't have the halach of lovud nimtza, right, if the defanos have to be attached to the schach, then how do you create that tziruf if there's avir between them? And the answer could only be rak mishum dina de lovud, de hudim itztarfei aschachos vadfanos lahadod v'zel de pligim yesh din lovud b'emtza asukah. Okay, so let's just summarize what we need for our purposes. Reb Chaim is wavering back and forth as to what the halacha of pachos migimel tfachim is all about. Is that halacha that pachos migimel tfachim is considered to be filled in, to be attached based on the universal halacha of lavud, and we're applying it in klali? Or is that halacha in shiurim in hilchas sukkah with a new din misuyam and exeris hakosiv of hilchas gemirla in sukkah? Says Rav Chaim, there are two sugyas, and they seem to contradict each other. One sugya applies the law of lavu to avir of sukkah. The other applies the halacha of gimel tfachim in the case of schach posel, where there is no halacha of lavu. Says Rav Chaim, both are correct. The universal halacha of lavu is correct, and we need it. And the specific din mesuyam of lovewood that's derived from the Hilchas Gemirla in Hilchas Shirim in Makom is also required, also necessary. And they address two different sugyas. When we're addressing the sugya of Avir that might separate the Schach from the Dofen, and the Halacha requires that there be a Tziruf between the Schach and the Dofen, here we operate with the universal Halacha of lovewood. When we're dealing with the Halacha of Schach Posel, the Din Chloli of love is not going to help me anymore, because we have schach posel. Schach posel is a mafsik, and therefore we can't apply the halacha of love. But here we have a different halacha of the shiurim of gimel tfachim as a makom bifnei atzma. And that leads me to hilchas trumas. But I'm just looking at the clock. What time is it now?
Almost one.
So I think we should leave hilchas trumas, which is sort of midway in its complexity, for tomorrow, Bli Neder. I know, David, you can't be here tomorrow, so you'll have to somehow fill in the Reb Chaim Hilchas Trumas on your own, but I can rely on you. I know you can do it.
It's on tape.
Or you can listen to the recording if this machine works. If I get new batteries. Okay. But now I just want to point out that I gave you also four pages from Rav Zev. So just to get started with Rav Zev says, and I think I may have mentioned this to you in the past, that Rav Chaim used to derive conclusions not only from what the Rambam says, but also from what the Rambam doesn't say. Do you remember this? So what was the story? And this story was told over by Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky, who wrote a magnificent magnum opus on the Tosefta. He lived in Beit Vagan. And he was a Talmud of Reb Chaim back in Brisk. And what happened was, two people died in Brisk. The first person who died was very poor. The second person who died was considered the Parnas Ha'ir. He was the main supporter of the whole city of Brisk. And the Chevra Kadisha decided that they would take the rich guy out to bury first. And the relative of the poor person came to Reb Chaim to complain. And he said, how could they do such a thing? That's not fair. My relative died first. He should be buried first. So Rabbi Cheska Abramsky tells the following story. Reb Chaim got out of his chair, opened up the Rambam in Hilchas Avelus, turn the few pages, close the Rambam, and said to the family member, it's none of your business, I'll take care of it. And then Reb Chaim took his cane and his cape, or whatever cloak he wore, and he quickly ran over to the Chevra Kadisha, and he told the Chevra Kadisha that if you don't bury the poor person first, then I'm going to punish you, and in a very severe punishments, which he had the authority to do as the Rav of Brisk. So Rabbi Yecheskel said, Rebbe, what did you find in the Rambam? And why did you tell this relative that it's none of his business? And then you yourself went ahead and straightened out the Chevra Kadisha. So Reb Chaim said, I wanted to know whether in Hilchas Kvod HaMes, in Hilchas Avelus, the person who dies first has to be buried first. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I found nothing in the Rambam. Then I understood that it's not halacha in Avelus. It's halacha in mitzvah habo liyodcha al tachmitzena. That when you have two mitzvahs, you first have to apply the first mitzvah and then the second mitzvah. That has nothing to do with the Avel, with the relative. That's not his business. If the Rambam would have held it's halacha in Avelus, then he, the relative, has a right to demand kavod hames for my relative. He has to be buried first. Said Reb Chaim, it's none of your business. It's a general halacha that the first mitzvah has to be fulfilled first. That's my responsibility as the Rav of Brisk to set the Chevra Kadisha straight.
No, the Einan who's Eisim the mitzvah.
That the Onein is Osek in the mitzvah of Kfura, but his mitzvah of Kfura does not. But I'm saying it doesn't give him rights to demand that the Chevra Kadisha bury his deceased first. The Chevra Kadisha was wrong for doing so, but under a universal halacha of mitzvahs. And therefore, Reb Chaim said, it's my responsibility as a Mora D'Asra to set this. So Reb Chizkel Abramsky said, you see from Reb Chaim that he's to learn not only from what the Rambam writes, but what the Rambam omits. Reb Zevin points out that this is a classical case in which Reb Chaim was vacillating about Din Mesuyam and Din Kloli. He wanted to know, is this halacha in Avelus? Or it's a universal principle of first mitzvah gets priority. Okay then, so we'll stop here.
Why is the person dying first of the mitzvah? Is it a matter of timing that the first?
Yeah, because the very moment of death generates the mitzvah of kvura. Kvura is how. That's why you should know. I don't know, in America they're not so makpin on this. I don't know, in England I don't know, but here in Eretz Yisrael they very rarely. If you're dealing with the Chevra Kadusha that unfortunately on three occasions my family had to deal with, they are very hesitant to postpone. My mother died at 9 a.m. She was buried at 12 noon. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever had that experience.
My mother was Niftas Shabbos here 3 years ago. My brother only found a Motzei Shabbos in the States.
So they waited for him.
And they were in there 24 hours later.
Meaning on Sunday when he got it. So you probably didn't use the same Chevra Kadisha.
The ones who don't let sons go to father. The
Prushim?
Yeah.
But you have to fight a battle for that. I can't believe they just.
There's no battle.
Okay.
I think it was a busy day.
I don't know what the circumstances were. But generally speaking, the Prushim here in Eretz Israel are not excited about delaying burial. You know, they want you buried as soon as you can.
Everybody who died.
I say that, but I did some of the Shmira and lots of Shabbos. There was only one lift of nine limbs and my mother, yeah.
Were you the youngest?
No.
There's a consideration.
No, because I had to prove whether it was the Prusha or not. Because I had to close my mother's eyes, could you imagine?
Yeah.
With sand.
Yeah.
So you had the Prusha. Yeah. So I'm surprised. But in the case of the Prusha, as far as I know, Daniel is setting me straight. But the way I understood it was the Prusha are very mocked. With death, you know, you're already halfway to being buried. No postponement. But be that as it may, in the case of Reb Chaim, you know, that story, Reb Chaim was of the opinion that that's a universal halacha. It's not a unique halacha in Kfura and in Avelus. All right, then, Blineda, tomorrow if you're around, I don't know, David's not going to be, I don't know who is going to be here. Anybody?
I can be.
You can't be here?
Probably.
So we'll have two or three people, and we'll. I just want to finish up what we started, because there's some fascinating things here in Hilchus Trumas. Maybe I'll figure out the Reb Chaim Hilchus Trumas Ochlin, and then Reb Zevin has a few brilliant stories about Kibud Av and about Reb Chaim and how he dealt with these issues.
I've been working on some of the last couple of days, and I'm not quite getting to my skull, and maybe you can help with it. Maybe it's related to a similar sort of thing. I'm learning in Masech Rosh Hashanah, the Sugya Bal Ta'acha.
Three Moadim, or?
Yeah, three. I'm telling you, there's also a mitzvah say that you've got to do the first Yontif. And with a Niyim, that you have to get stuck at the altar. There's no delay.
So meaning that as far as Korbanos is concerned, maybe we'll be more flexible. But
I actually saw in the Chinuch. The Chinuch says the reason why our Korbanos will be more flexible is not to have people come other than the first. Make a date to give a carbon. You wait for. If you say you're going to do it straight away, people will never give Korbanos voluntarily.
But in Stalker, we're much more.
Yeah, but Stalker is an example of something that there's no reason to delay. So it came to me, I looked in the Chinuch, it all seems to do with the Zrizus. The whole concept seems to be to do with Zrizus. So, for example, yesterday in the parasha we had Ushmata Mesa Matzahs, and there's a famous Rashi, he may mention this here as well. And there's a very interesting Maharal on Shmatim Esha Mitzvahs. So Shmatim, it goes into
Zman or something.
Yeah, Zman, but Zman be chiposim and shpatim.
Rav Kutna has a whole article on this. I don't know. It's the first piece on Pesach in the volume of Pesach.
But I've been looking over, and nobody links the sugya Bal Ta'acha to the concept of Zrizus. In any way, I look. The chinuch gives a sherish of mitzvah. Yeah, one shouldn't be misatza, which I think is the reverse of zrizus. I'm just not thinking it's a share thing, but maybe about the acha it's a separate mitzvah.
Exactly. In other words, that this halacha of Bal Ta'acher is going to be quoted in the Rambam Hilchos Ma'aseh Korbanos, not in a general context of Zrizus Makdim. In other words, it's a din v'suyo.
Yeah, I don't read the so well. The Ramban on the Sefer Mitzvahs of the Ramban is chaylik in Bal Ta'acher. Whether it's one mitzvah, two mitzvah, it brings it all into one mitzvah. This could be.
Because we have it, and that's why my Rebbe used to always say that chaviva mitzvah b'shaita is a din misuya. It's not just an expression of zrizus. How did he prove it? Because the Gemara says in Menachos in Perek Rabbi Shmuel that for the sake of Haktar Saimurim, we're going to be Doche Shabbos. Why? Because Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shait. No, it's technically you could do the Haktar Saimurim after Shabbos, but the halacha is to. So the Rav asked, if it's a general halacha, why should it be Doche Shabbos? You know, very nice that we have a halacha of Zrizu Makdila Mitzvahs, but that would override the Shabbos. The answer is that's part of the Karvan. That the Karvan has to be brought B'Shait.
Right. Is Eima Viram another cloud?
Or is a Din Mesuyam, or it's just a
separate from Chavim Mitzvahs?
Each one, the same thing.
So you say,
for example, even in Zekeli Aveyu in Hidur Mitzvah, you can wonder whether or not it's a general halacha or every mitzvah.
This sugya Bal Ta'acher is a fascinating sugya, but there's a machlokes on the post of Bal Ta'acher, and there's five Tanoim who argue whether it's three Yom Tov. Remeir says it's one Yom Tov. Because there's a pasuk uvasem vehevesem. This is Russia. When you come to be a regal, then you should bring all your nedarim.
Right.
So when I saw about the other mother, they said, yeah, that's for the assay. But the those I said, oh, that's a different brochure. So you can see there, that I think basically see that Reb Meir holds that the lois assay kicks automatically from the assay, whereas the
you separate the essay, the los has two independent.
Yeah. The los is like
the mayor merges them together.
Right. There's also a lovely sugya which I can't remember which color comes into it, but Chavta Gavra. There's a brilliant one. Mm-hmm. There's another pasuk Moshe Sasecha Tishma. So it might end up making Chakira. Why do we need both Losa Acher and Moshe Sasecha? So one is a case where you Omer Velo Hifrish. You made the neder to bring carbon. You weren't Hifrish. Hifrish. So Gemara ends up. So how can you have a case in Omer Velo Hifrish? And one of the things listed in the pasuk Sasecha is in the Dovla. Now Dovla really means Harizu.
Right.
That means he'd be an Oma already.
Right. So he's looking for a case.
Because
there was no Abi.
So my limited brain says, well, Nobel is a din Cheftza, and a Neder is a din in Gavra.
That's definitely true.
We discussed it a few weeks ago. So Gemara ends up, Robert Kansi, you know what the case is? The case where he said, Harry Olai, like a neighbor. Altsnaish ain't by Achrayas. Then I've got no Achrayas because one of these Nadovah is.
The definition of Neder is that you do have Achrayas. So he said Almanas Eliyah.
So this becomes a hybrid.
And Gemara, is that a sugi by Masa Maschkos Betorah? Whether you can make such a
thing? Test ask. Test this. They're just with one minor. It's not Masa Torah. So I was trying to work out Machafos. Is now that this is in Gabra? Chef says a hybrid. What is this?
Ah, how do you define Almanas Sheinli Achrayas? Is it now. It's a nether, but there's no.
I said this
is no chovas.
The real klal on the nedava is achrayas, not the loshna harilai or harizu.